friends and colleagues, Dr. Rich Frazier, with SOS Ministries. I've had a chance not only to know Rich, but to minister with Rich and to each other for many decades. And as we approach this holiday and Christmas season, we have the opportunity to reflect even in a greater way a spirit of generosity to help ministries around the world that we believe are on the cutting edge of seeing the gospel spread. And so, Rich, come and tell us and introduce us to a new friend.
Thank you. Thank you. Did they give me a mic that worked?
Yes.
This time? That's good. That's good. Hey, you look beautiful. We've been anticipating being with you for some time now, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to be with you again. I don't know what's behind me yet. Joel, if we could get the first slide. Pastor Gary's mentioned, I have the privilege of leading a ministry called SOS International, Spiritual Overseers Service International, and we have the privilege of partnering with you to make sure that the rest of the world hears about the gospel of Jesus Christ, that they become disciples and grow and church plant churches and all these types of things. If you don't know about SOS International just yet, the next slide will show you that we are the ones who sent your pastor to Ghana three times? Twice. To equip and train leaders. We're not only the ministry that sent him there, we're also the ministry that got him back to you after he taught that. So we have the, by the grace of God, we have the privilege of working with many leaders around the world. The next slide should show you many of those leaders, who they are. There you go. This was a meeting that we had in Thailand a couple of years ago with leaders from several different countries around the world, from the Caribbean to Africa to South Asia. And this morning, I have the privilege of introducing to you one of our colleagues from Nepal. His name is Pradeep Jha. He's the founder and director of Tabernacle Ministries. I've mentioned him to you before, but I know that you're going to give a wonderful welcome and listen attentively to my good friend and my colleague Pradeep Jha from Tabernacle Ministries as he comes.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm so privileged to be here, and thank you for your warm welcome. I feel like home, and every time I'm here in the United States, I consider it as a my part of my global family, and that's we are, because we are of the same global family, the body of Christ, and serving the same Lord in different places. So, I would like to introduce my family to you. Next slide. My family is here. You can see my wife Julie and two boys. They're energy of the house. Punu, he's 11, and actually his name is Protsahan. Nickname is Punu. Protsahan means of encouragement. The root word is Barnabas. And then Pratit. Pratit means trust, so they are our encouragement and trust and wonderful growing disciples of the Lord, and I'm really, really blessed by these boys. And Puno wants to become a pastor and robotic engineer. I said, they will go well if you can handle. So, and Pratit wants to become a preacher like me, and so, and he does all mimicry of me when I'm not there. So, very sharp boys. And so Pratit will become a five when I get back home next Friday night, our time. So, last week I was talking to him and he said, I asked him, when is your birthday? He said, whenever you get back. So, I make sure that I get back on the... Well, I'm privileged to be here, and let me share a little bit about my story, how I became a believer, because I come from a Hindu background. If you have any knowledge of Hinduism, then there are so many caste systems in Hinduism, and they fall into two different categories. One is touchable. That means I cannot marry you even if you are touchable, but I can have food and drink, and we can meet each other. But then there is untouchable. And we don't have anything to do with them. So they're completely untouchable. And water is a dividing factor in that. So I was born in the highest family called the Brahmin, and from the priestly family. And so we believe, according to Hindu philosophy, that when you are Brahmin, you are a smaller god yourself. And when you die, you get merged into a universal god called Brahma. So we never needed God because we were a god ourselves. But that wasn't true in life. So I was born and brought up in a Hindu family, so I was part of that. And but when I was 18 years old, my life was not as it should be. I was surrounded by a bad circle of friends, and I was a kind of gangster in my neighborhood over there. And my parents were not happy, and so my life was completely messed, and I was loving it. I didn't care. My friends were more important than my parents. So during that time, my uncle, my mother's youngest brother, became a believer, and he was a kind of secret believer. He would not expose himself, but he had a one Gideon Bible. I used to read time to time. I loved the Gospel of John a lot, but I was scared to death by the commands of Jesus because they were too good to follow at that time. So long story short, my uncle introduces gospel to me one morning, said, "Pradeep, your life is a mess. Why don't you believe in Jesus Christ and get straight with God?" I said, "I know, because I read your Bible time to time, but the problem is I have to stop doing things that I'm doing and I'm loving them. So I promise 10 years later when I'm 28, I will believe in Jesus, and he's not going to come that soon." So I was so logical even when I was not a believer, or I was pre-believer. But I was so rude in my saying that he got really hurt, and he said, "Pradeep, I will not tell you about Jesus anymore." I said, "That's a good deal." But just 2 days later, God had a different plan. My best friend quarreled with me over some money that I was not willing to give. Then I realized he was after my money. So I was completely broken. Who was better than anyone else in my life? He fought. So I came back home thinking that my parents are unhappy. My best friend fought with me. I hurt my uncle. There's no meaning in living. So I came back home that night thinking of committing suicide. But I was scared of not succeeding in it. So I was thinking, that what should I do? I tried to hang myself, but I didn't trust the rope. I tried to cut my nerve and bleed to death. But again, I thought that would be a long process and lots of hurt. So I said, "No, you take a poison and sleep and you're gone." And again, I was scared because, you know, most of the things we import, more than 80% of our stuffs come from neighboring country, and you never know that's fake or genuine, you know. So those things were going on in real life, and I was so stressful, I was tired, I slept. But later that night, 1 a.m., I woke up, and I was sitting on my bed. Literally, my body was shaking, and I was so fearful like never before. And I didn't know what's happening with me. So as I was trying to understand my situation, I saw that dark night, one ray of light came through that pierced the roof and became bigger and bigger. I was more scared because I never had that kind of experience before. So as I was trying to adjust myself to the situation, I saw one man in white robe stretching his hands. His face was too bright to look at. But I heard the audible voice, two sentences, "Pradeep, I want to save you, and I want to bring you out of the slime you are going in." And I responded in this way, "Lord, if it is so, then I give my life to you, commit myself." Even today, almost 21 years later, I don't know how did I recognize him as the Lord and Savior, but New Testament tells us that even that seed faith comes from him. So next morning, that experience happened like 2 minutes or so. Next morning, I ran to my uncle. I said, "I want to believe in Jesus." He said, "What happened? 3 days ago, you said 10 years. So I told him what happened last night, and then he fascinated me by saying, "Pradeep, 3 days ago when you said no for 10 years, I'm in fasting prayer for you." And that blew my mind. I said, "What kind of love is this?" Yeah, a person said, I will not talk to you, but he is in fasting prayer. I want to experience this love, and I want to practice this love. So that morning, 9th November 1998, I gave my life to the Lord and said, I don't have any plan, so I will live for you. In better word, Jesus claimed my life for himself. So that's my story. But I come from the highest caste. That was a threat to my people and my family. So they said, you have gone down in the 8.4 million of rebirth cycle that you came out of. So all blah, blah thing. And so finally I was kicked out of my family. I was surrounded by villagers, more than 100 people surrounded one morning and started to beat and they stoned on our house. My dad said, you are no more my son. I have two and I will live with one. So I was kicked out and for 6.5 years I was addressless, homeless. All the doors of my relatives were shut. They said, we don't want to waste any meal on you. But God was faithful, and my dad was faithful to continue to persecute me by writing letters and threatening me of committing suicide, and I will be responsible if I don't come back to Hinduism. But I continued to pray and chose to be with my godly father. And he was faithful. After 18 and a half years of continued prayer, Lord counted all those prayers and answered on April 3rd, 2017, when my both parents gave their life to the Lord. So that's my story. And God, within 1 year of my conversion, God called me to ministry. And I was hesitant. I said, no, Lord, send someone else. Quickly I knew the ministry is not something I want to do. But his calling was, I will raise you from your own people. And he was right. So finally, I was struggling 1 year with God and saying no. I was defeated and I came back home for 10 days. I was in Delhi at that time and I wasn't able to go back for 7 years. And so that's how I started my ministry as an evangelist in my church. And with my uncle, we started our very first church in 1998 that he started. I joined later, and then we continued from there. In 2010, God called me again to start this Tabernacle Ministries. And we started, and we are in the mainly in church planting ministry. We have three major operations going on. Frontline is very aggressive. Outreach of evangelism. By the way, I would go through a slide over here. I have a few bullet points that I will follow. First thing is, here's in Nepal. I live in Kathmandu, but most of our work is down here. You see, that's a flat land, and that goes across the border down here in India. So northern part of India and southern part of Nepal, we are working heavily, and that's where 40 million Maithili speakers are, and I'm one of them. And we are working among 8 different language groups where our main focus is Maithili because they are unreached and very few. Out of 40 million, we are counting less than 20,000 believers. So that's what the reality is. But God has blessed us, so we have a strategy in place. We have planted 70 plus churches so far since 2011 that we put our strategy in. I was working with one of the IMB missionaries that he had that tool that I got. I was translating actually, then we adopted and that worked in for us. So 70 plus churches in Nepal and Indian side, that's a Tabernacle Ministry. But also I knew that we cannot do everything in this small life that we have. So we train other church planting networks. So through that, maybe 250 plus churches have been planted that we don't record ourselves. Over the years, I have equipped and developed 30 plus leaders that I oversee. And we train on the mobile trainings. We train our 1,500 leaders every year. That was last year. I need to count how many we did this year. So we do that. But as we are planting more churches, next slide, please. As we are planting more churches and discipling more, So we go and into a village, new village, and plant a new church. We find a man of peace, and you know, in the reality, literally, that village has been waiting to hear about Jesus for the last 2,000 years. So can you imagine the joy you have? But within a few minutes, I see other villages as well. So we cannot stay there, so we go further. So we have a backup plan of discipleship in a local church, and they grow, they meet together, and we have a strategy in place. But the problem, the more successful we are in the front end, there is a vacuum of leadership that becomes bigger and bigger. Because of, we have like a youngest one who planted a church is 11-year-old boy. And the oldest who planted a church is an 87-year-old man. And we have so many women planting churches. So we need to develop so many pastors and leaders for these churches have been planted. And that creates a leadership vacuum. And that's where I was thinking, I was praying about that, how to do. And then I saw that need, next slide please, that leaders need to develop their Bible knowledge. Because they are in threat, like early church we see in New Testament. They are in threat of cults. There are so many funny people, they say, oh, we find a son in a Bible and father in a Bible, so we got to have a mother. And she happens to be in South Korea. So they are bringing that knowledge. So when you don't have a real knowledge, you tend to go knowingly and unknowingly after them. And they are after believers. So they need a solid doctrine. Leaders need to be equipped and to plant and lead healthy, multiplying churches. If churches are not healthy, most likely there is another threat from background. They come from Hinduism. I still remember the very first Christmas I had in my life, I was fasting that day. Because my background is, as a Hindu, whenever there is a festival, you fast to be more holy. So that was by default. So these churches are prone to bring all the backgrounds. And we see in the New Testament that's what happened. And Paul was fighting with that. And as a result, we have most part of New Testament. So that's what happening in our place. Leaders need to be trained and recognize and confront the cults and false teaching and prevent them from background as well. Leaders need to recognition of their studies. So that's why we, next slide, we came up with the idea of a modular Bible college. Modular Bible college that has like a 12 college level classes in 24 months, six times a year, total 12 modules, where in each module they come for 5 days, 8 hours a day is a classroom, 40 hours a week, very intense. Total 500 hours of teaching, training, plus self-study and ministry project. All the students are already planting and leading churches and ministries. That's a neat thing, because we only bring those into a Bible college who are already doing something. So we need to train them. So when they do go back, they will be able to help their own church, and they will be a nearest available resource for surrounding churches. So that's a vision we have. And if we don't address that right now, most likely we'll lose the churches that have been planted by God's grace and very rapidly. So here's next slide, how it looks like. And in last August, we had Dr. Rich Frazier and his wife, Debbie. He taught on life and teaching on Jesus Christ. That was a powerful moment. And even our leaders, you know, I was interpreting most part of it. And when he said that Jesus pre-existed before he was born. And people didn't have a clue. And they learned and they were super excited. You know, so those basic things. And then his wife was teaching to our women's leaders, and our women's wing is started right now. Most recently, SOS International sent another pastor, Kim Harrell. He did a Bible survey. And so as a result, our people were saying that, hey, now we can see Genesis through the Revelation in one view. So isn't that amazing? And so that's what we are doing, and we are up to that. But these people are, they come from 6 hours, 8 hours from far. So we don't have actual place where we can run a Bible school. So sometimes it's in my church in Kathmandu, sometimes here and there. But we have one strategic place called Place Lahan. That's within 200 miles of state. This falls in a central location on the highway. And that's where we have our church. We started in 2013. It's an 8x10. You can see the 6 people are sitting and they're covering wall to wall. And that church has like 35, 40 people now, and they come and they all come on time. Not because they're on time person, because they need to sit inside. So we are thinking of having a place where we can have a bigger church over there, and also next Friday, we prayed and we invested up to this place that where we are. This is 2 weeks ago. This will be a bigger church for the local church, but let me tell you, this will be a Bible school center. This is a ministry center where we'll have conferences, and this is easily accessible in the central location. There are more than 60 churches around, and most of them are house churches, and they don't have place of wedding, place of any event or funeral. And this church, when people heard around, outside our network, few pastors came and then prayed for us. They said, you are going to build this, but we are going to use it. Because when people want to do a wedding, there's no place. There's a party place they can go to, they cannot afford. There's a community center, but there's idols on the stage. It feels odd. So this is going to solve lots of problems. And this is a flooded area, so we are elevating the foundation, so this will become a shelter during the flood. So this is what we are up to, where Bible school will be established and produced. Right now we have 18 students, and here is what we want to invite your pastor next year, God willing, to teach the Bible study and hermeneutics. Isn't that amazing? So thank you. Thank you so much. So I would like us to pray for this, as we are really invested, and I call it that if you take out the smartphones from our people's hand, we are in the first century. Whole Christianity in Nepal is 75-year-old. That's what we are. Thank you so much for this time.
All right.